Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome.
Hello, everybody. Today I'm here with the lovely Chris Wong. We're going to talk about men, men's feelings, men's relationships, men in marriages, men's social connections. It's the whole caboodle. This man here is so qualified to talk about this. He's a father of two, a podcast host, a business owner, and he lives outside Boston in Massachusetts. He's worked in the nonprofit and healthcare sector for more than 15 years. He began his career working as a licensed therapist and transitioned into learning and development. He also built a leadership and organizational department from the ground up, including formal mentorship and leadership development programs, and led organizational projects. He founded the Leadership Potential, where he partners with new nonprofit executives to confidently navigate chaotic transitions and create high-performing cultures to get things done. This involves working with nonprofit leaders around executing strategic plans, as well as addressing challenges such as conflict resolution, culture enhancement, board engagement, building influence, and fostering inclusive work environments. He serves on the board of a foundation and the board of a nonprofit, and also co-hosts the podcast, The Art and Science of Difficult Conversations, where he helps people master difficult conversations in all domains of their lives. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for that really nice introduction.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. It's impressive. It's impressive. It's lovely to have you being here with me. So let's think. What would you say really got you into working with men's issues in the first place?
Well, I got started as a therapist, and I was working with teen, mostly adolescent boys. There were some girls in there too, but mostly adolescent boys around. I just lucked into a specialty where they had sex offending behaviors. And so it was just a underrepresented treatment area. I remember going to a conference early on and they said, you know, if you want to do research in this area, in 2-3 years, you'll be world famous because there's not enough people doing research around this type of issue. And so I didn't do that because I didn't care about it as much, but that always stuck with me. And then as I got older, or as I matured in my professional career, I also just grew. Like, I've always been interested in suicide prevention. That's something that's affected me. That's why I'm on the board of a suicide prevention nonprofit. And I was finding that, you know, there's high rates of suicide among older men. And a lot of it's due to this. We have a lack of socialization. We don't have as much emotional bonds as women do. And so that just struck me. And so I was able to, luckily I was able to find good men's groups, social peer groups, and we were able to build strong relationships. So that always mattered to me. But I just found that that's not true for everyone. A lot of men are just trying to go through life on their own. And so when I started doing therapy again, I said, you know what? I want to work with men. I think there's a group here of people, there's a subset of people who really need help learning how to manage things and just even talk about their feelings in general.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a much needed field. It's one of the major causes of death amongst men in the UK, suicide. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you say are the major issues? Let's maybe put it into different categories, you know, like young men and older men? What have you observed?
Yeah, I think older men are stuck. And I'll say this, I'll only speak from a Western perspective because I haven't done a lot of work with kind of Eastern cultures or other kind of African cultures, things like that. So I don't want to speak for everybody, every man.
Good
ever.
Point. Yeah.
But I will say that for the men that I've seen, I've interacted with, I've worked with, a lot of men, older men in the later stages of life tend to really focus on their career as their identity. And so then I tend to work with them when they've lost a job, when they're feeling unfulfilled, and suddenly they're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know who I am. I feel lost. I feel overwhelmed with making all these other big decisions. And so I think they come to a reckoning point of like, what do? I don't have any friends. I don't have any social group to reach out to. I'm just stuck by myself. So I think that's for older men, that stage, at least, I think there's a lot of intertwining of the mixture of their career, mixture of who they are as a person, because they've just wrapped so much into their career. And that's across like a lot of demographics that I see, even if you're religious, even if you are not religious, you know, across ethnic groups, like people here in the Western culture really identify with what they do for work, you know.
Wow. And I am what I do. And if I don't have what I do, who am I?
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So that's a really big shock to the system.
It is. It is. I think because they put so much effort into it and they say, like, I'm really good at what I do, but now what do? Now who am I? You know, they don't say who am I because they don't know how to ask that question yet, but they're essentially asking that question. You know, what value do I have? I've asked some of my therapy clients, I'll ask them, you know, one of the exercises I have is like, if you're on a desert island, you're not a father, you're not a son, you're not a dad anymore, and you don't have a job. You're just there on an island. You're just living there. What's your value as a person? And most of them will say like between 5 and 7, they can't even rate themselves highly as a person because they don't know where they are, what they want to do. And so there's a lot of different factors. Much smarter people than me have researched about that. But it certainly does contribute to the idea that the struggle that they have at that stage of life.
Yeah, I can get that, especially if it's very, very well entrenched, like 40s or 50s. You've been doing what you do for 20, 30 years. Yeah, that's very deep. Yeah. And what about younger men?
Younger men, I find that they have the same thing. They just don't have as much. You know, they're brought up in this social media world where there's so much people talking about be who you are, be true to you, you know, live your life, YOLO, all that kind of stuff. And so even though they have careers, even though they're like doing stuff, like they're just maybe out of college or they still feel unfulfilled. They still feel like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I should be doing. And some of the guys I work with, they have friends, they go out with friends, but it's really more, they're just kind of going through the motions. They don't really have a good sense of like, who am I? What am I trying to do? So I find that the younger folks that I work with, like the younger guys, like 20s, they tend to have more friends. A lot of them are holdovers from college. A lot of them are because they have roommates. So they have built-in friends. They haven't necessarily had to go out and create new friendships yet, but they still feel the same way of, at least they have someone to talk to, but they just still don't have the, who am I? What's my ultimate goal? Where am I trying to get to?
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I get that. So what happens then? I mean, because, you know, my podcast is largely about relationships. What happens then when they're having relationships?
Well, once they get into a romantic relationship, their spouse tends to end up being like their entire focus of their friendship and social sphere, you know, and then otherwise they're just by themselves. And so they depend on, you know, a lot of the guys I work with are straight. So like a lot of their wives will then become like their best friend, which is okay. That's fine that they're their best friend, but it's also their only friend. Like that's the only person they'll talk to. But then, you know, there's more complicated dynamics around that. You know, not every wife is able or willing to have those deep conversations about kind of what men are feeling just because of different gender roles. Right. And so I saw one guy was talking about how he, on a podcast, it's not somebody I treat, but somebody on a podcast was saying he him and his family were sleeping at night, and he heard a noise in the basement. So he went to go check it out, with something to defend himself in case somebody broke in. And it was nothing. It was just like something fell over. But he's like, it stuck with him. Like, the expectation was that he had to go check it out, or at least call 911. And he wasn't allowed to show fear. Like, if his wife had seen him show fear, like he wasn't sure what to do, it would kind of disrupt how she viewed the situation, how she viewed him. And so I find that in those relationships, men feel like their wife is their best friend. And at the same time, they're not really able to be fully true and open and vulnerable to a degree with that, right? Because it's whether the wife's own personal views on what dynamics there are or things like that. But so like essentially they don't really have anyone to chat with. They don't really have anyone to share, like, I'm scared about this, or I'm worried about this, or this makes me anxious, until they talk to someone like me. Or, you know, some of them do find friends, and that's fine. That's great. But they don't really have an outlet for the vast majority of men.
So what you're saying is, in a way, although their wife may be their friend, they still are living in role, protector, provider sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right. So there's an emptiness at the heart.
Right. Right. And like, I've done it with my own wife. Like, I've tried to share about, like, well, how I feel overwhelmed about something. And, you know, I wasn't complaining about it. I just want to say, hey, listen, I'm just talking about, like, I feel overwhelmed. And her first response is like, or I see her like tearing up, and I'm like, what's going on for you? And she starts tearing up, saying how she feels guilty as a mom because she's not able to manage all these things. And so even if I'm trying to share vulnerably, like, and I've heard this from lots of guys, like they might try to share vulnerably, and then all of a sudden their spouse or partner starts sharing even something more like intense. And then so, like, whether it's intended to be like, let's bond together over this, you know, my instinct is, oh, let me help you soothe through this. It's not let's work through this together. So it's a very difficult dynamic to work through.
Yes, I can see that. That's sort of almost like a competition for who is the most needy to get looked after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's quite fascinating. I'm sort of wondering if to share something that I don't think we did talk about before. And that is 2.5 years ago, my nephew took his own life. Mm. And I think it was for similar reasons. That he felt like there was nobody there for him. Everybody else had greater needs. It's not until you're saying this that is becoming more possible as a thing for me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of stuff, I think, about women expecting men to man up all the time. And at the same time, how can I put this? Wanting to be in their feminine and still being in the masculine in the daytime. You know, it's a lot of shifting sand at the moment.
I think so. I think there's so much conflicting messages that men are receiving, right? Like that we are part of a patriarchy. We're setting up these systems which are harmful, which I agree. We are part of a system that's harmful towards women. Mm-hmm. Totally agree with that. And I think luckily I'm part of a faith, and I've got training as a therapist. So like I have a pretty good understanding of my emotions and what's going on, and understanding in my mind, at least, like how to create a more, what manhood should look like in more equal setting. But I recognize not a lot of men get that. And so then essentially a lot of men are being told, you're the problem, you're part of the problem, you're causing this. But nobody's telling them this is how you should behave, or this is how you could be a better man, and how do you, you know, be a leader or be a man in the society that's more equal. And so then the only examples are like these really toxic masculine perspectives that come out that, you know, are to the nth degree, you know, harmful to themselves and others. And so it's not helpful. So there's not as many voices about like, what does a healthy male and masculine leadership look like, or masculine energy look like, that's both in touch with emotions and feelings and being able to share and still playing whatever roles you want to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Men are people too, you know?
Yeah. We all are. We're all people.
Yes. I know, is it? Yeah, and I think there's some sort of political redressing of balances going on because, you know, men of this era weren't the ones that set up the patriarchy to begin with. And women of this era are making that transition to be more independent and not necessarily choosing men to be the father of their children and the ideal partner. They're just choosing them because they want that one now. It may not be for an enduring relationship. I think there's even some negative stuff about having partners at all, which I think is a lot for men to address. There's all the stuff you get about catfishing, you know, men online trying to lure women into being in relationship with them and then taking them for everything they've got. But you also hear it the other way. I mean, maybe I'm in a privileged position to hear that. But I hear men talking about going on dates with women and being expected to pay and do everything. Even one woman going out on a third or fourth date and asked to go shopping, went to a high-end shopping center and tried on lots of clothes. And when it got to the pay desk, stood back and expected him to pay for these six dresses she'd chosen.
Oh, that's so
You know,
interesting.
yeah, these things happen. And it's really tough on men.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think of that as like it's always about that mix or that complementary, like what is your cultural and expectations also? Like what's your view of what's right and what's wrong and how people should behave? Like, if a man and a woman in this kind of scenario were in that third date, but both of them both had that viewpoint and that value system, like this is what it should look like, there's not really a problem, right? Like if that guy also believes I am a provider, I need to pay for my date, then I in my mind there's not really an issue. There's no disconnect because they both are coming from the same cultural viewpoint, and it makes sense that it's not overly hurting anybody because they're both on of the same mindset, right?
Yeah, but if they're not,
If they're
and
not,
I think as well, a third date's quite a lot to expect $1,000 worth of clothes.
yeah. I mean, I'll say this: every day, I wish my wife would just wake up and say, "Hey, listen, I'm actually a billionaire. I've been testing you for the last 10, 12 years to make sure you really love me." So, I don't know. I think there's plenty of people, like plenty of guys, also that would like to be pampered and taken care of too.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. My partner Ian and I went away for his birthday, which happens to be New Year's Eve. And we went away a couple of days afterwards because, you know, it's always mayhem that night. And he absolutely loved being taken away. We went to Rick Stein's in Padstow, which is a nice restaurant with a place to stay by the seaside. It was absolutely lovely. And I could just see him sort of soaking it up. It was really, really lovely. And why shouldn't men want that?
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. If my wife were to make enough where I didn't have to work anymore, I'm all for it. I'll take care of everything in the house. That's fine with me.
Sweet. It's sweet. Yeah. And then we get into that whole other dynamics of the children, yes, which we don't have because we don't have children together. But what's that like for men these days, the balance of childcare and working? What do you see in the people you work with?
I think it's the same thing that we've always had. It's always, how do I, like every guy I've ever worked with cares about their kids. They want their kids to be successful. They want them to learn respect. I don't think there's anything hard about that. I think it's they have maybe unrealistic expectations of how much kids can learn by themselves. And they don't remember or realize how much their role in shaping the kids is. It doesn't matter how much time, right? Where kids aren't counting how much time you're spending with them. It's really matter. They're thinking about like when you're with them, are you with them? Are you doing something with them? Are you helping them understand the context of why things are happening? I have a client who has a teenage son, and he just went through a layoff, a pretty devastating layoff. They have to sell their house. They have to do all this stuff. And their son is understandably very upset. Acting out, kind of refusing to help with the move and things like that. And my client keeps describing how he's feeling overwhelmed and how he's feeling stressed and all this stuff. It's the exact same feelings his son is going through, no different there. And he just can't seem to understand that. He just wants his son to like stop acting like this and figure it out and move forward. And it's hard for him to see, like, oh, my son is going through these deep emotions too. Me just telling him to buck up is not going to work, no matter how many times I say it. It's really about how I navigate this. And we keep talking about that. He's like, how do I get through to him? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't, like, I wish I could just tell him, like, you just got to sit down and talk to him and just listen to what he's saying and feeling and not try to tell him, solve the problem for him.
Yeah. And it strikes me that he may well be replicating what was given to him, you know, just buck up and get on with it.
Right. Which we talk about. That's why I bring up his dad and his parents, and he talks about that all the time. So, like, it's so interesting. Like, they're replicating it, but yeah, I think in terms of the both parents working at this point, I think it's still really just when you're with them, you got to be with them. And I get it. You're like, I have two young kids. There's times when I just want to sit down and not do anything. So there's times when they want to play and I don't want to play. And mm-hmm. I can't promise that I play with them all the time, but there are certainly times I do play with them and I make sure that I'm there with them, or I'm describing like why you do certain things or why we have to treat people nicely and things like that. Cause you know, that's just life. They have to be out in the world, but they also have to get some guidance from somewhere.
And that full attention, not scrolling sideways attention or TV. Yeah. Attention. Yeah. Full attention really, really matters. And I see that because, you know, working with men and women, I work a lot more with women than men. Even though women are supposed to be more emotionally attuned, they're not necessarily emotionally attuned to themselves. So there's mm-hmm. that endless thing that we need to teach as a cornerstone, which is, what am I feeling? What do I need? And really being with yourself, listening to that. Because mm-hmm. if you haven't got that, you haven't got anything.
Yeah. 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 I work with a lot of guys who they come in because their wife keeps trying to like have conversations with them. And they say, you know, I just don't know what I'm feeling. I'm not lying to her. I'm not lying to my wife when I say, I don't know. I just really don't know. My mind goes blank. I don't know what I'm feeling.
Mm. Yes. Yes. And sometimes I give out the list from the Center for Nonviolent Communication, lists of feelings and lists of needs, and the feelings you have when your needs are met and the feelings you have when your needs aren't. Just so there's something that gives something to hang on to, the naming of things by somebody else. Oh, that's what that feeling is. That's when I could expect to feel like that. Because we don't really teach our kids that very much.
Right. Right. Unless you're in like to your point, unless you're in touch and you have those words, how could you help your kids identify what they might be feeling in that situation?
Yeah. 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 And how can you really communicate with your wife? I guess you're not using words, which is a very strong suit for women, but you may be using acts of service or gifts or quality time, physical touch. But because you're not using words, she won't notice you're loving her.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about what the barriers are for men creating social groups. And it seems to me that ideally there'd be social groups where these sort of things were being discussed. But it sounds like we're talking about social groups per se.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hard. I think this, everybody that like starts working full time or they move to a new city, this is a very common question. Like, how do I make friends in the new place? And the more social you are, the easier it is. The more extroverted you are, it's just easier for you because you're just willing to talk to people. The more introverted you are, the more shy you are, it's just harder because you're not purposely talking to people or you're not joining hobbies or activities where you meet other people. Like, if your hobby is clay molding, if you have all the stuff in your house, you don't need to go out to do anything. You don't need to talk to anybody about it. You can just make whatever you want and then throw it away or give it away, whatever it is. But you know, you may not be doing a social activity where you meet people.
Yeah. And even if you're introverted, it doesn't mean you don't need people.
Right. Mm-hmm. I heard a quote also, like, I think the younger generation, I think there's not a trend. It's not an explicitly like wealth conscious trend, but it's a trend of I'd like to go to a party, but I don't want to throw a party. So people are more than happy to go to social events. They want that. We're all craving that social interaction and connection. But how many people, there's much less people willing to actually put the effort into creating that space and doing it, because it just takes energy. It takes mental energy, physical energy. And if you're working all day and your mind is just drained at the end of the day, you may not want to then just throw a party and get together with like a bunch of people.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think maybe meetup groups really do form a beautiful cornerstone for that, because somebody else is making that their purpose.
Yeah.
And I think as well, there's the sort of status of what kind of party you throw. You know, is it a success? And the comparison thing, and that's not just men, that's women. You know, is this going to be well received? And so much more about the social media assessment of that, you know, lose the will.
Yeah, like me, I was talking to my wife about this last night, and we said, you know, when we throw a party, we know what we're trying to do. We just want to get people over to eat and enjoy themselves and not stress about anything. And we've got it to, like, we've thrown enough parties where, like, we're good at, like, we'll finish cleaning up within like half an hour, 45 minutes. Because we like set it up in a way where like everything is disposable or easily cleaned up, and we don't have to stress about a lot of different things. And so we've got it. So it's not a huge burden to us to think about that. It's really just really more just thinking about when we're going to throw it.
Well, I think there could be a training opportunity in that, you know.
Yeah. How to throw easy parties that are easy to clean up and recover from.
Yeah. So is there anything else that is burning question for you around working with men? Any other issues we haven't touched on?
I think the social thing is so huge. I think about this a lot. I wish there was non-religious open groups that I could just assign men to go to. Like if they come to me and they're like struggling with whatever this, and they don't have any social supports, because if they do, then that's fine. We can work on other things. But if they don't have any social supports, I wish I could just prescribe, go to this group and start sharing about your feelings and what's going on. You know, a social group that's meeting once a week or more or less. I mean, and just an opportunity for you to share openly and honestly and be vulnerable with other guys.
Yeah, that's very rare.
I don't know any place that does it on a regular basis. The only places I know that do it are religiously affiliated. But I understand not everybody's religious, so I wish there was like a non-religious type group you could do that in. And I get that there's like sports leagues, which are okay. Sports leagues, game leagues, those are also okay. But I think you need to find the space where you can talk as men and start sharing about like, hey, I'm struggling because my 3-year-old hasn't been sleeping over the past 6 months. I'm about to tear my hair out. And my wife just lost her job. So now we're strapped for money.
Yeah,
like it's helpful to just talk those things out loud, even if there's no answer, right? It's you just have to live with it, those kind of things. But just being able to talk it out and have other guys listen and not say, you think you have a bad thing? Look at my situation.
Yeah. Get out of that competitive thing and get into the supportive, compassionate thing. Yeah.
Right.
I'm completely with you. So if anybody out there has got any ideas about how to set these things up, let us know. We'd love to see if there are any, and if we can make any sort of perpetuation of them or extension of them across the globe, eh?
Yeah. I feel like that's not anything you would make money off of, but it's just something that would be like a good social good, like how to do healthy masculinity.
Yes. So you could do that and you wouldn't end up with the Samaritans because you're lonely or suicidal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how can people contact you if they want to?
Well, you can always follow me on my website. It's myleadershippotential.com. I'm also active on LinkedIn, Chris Wong, LMHC. That's where you'll see mostly posting my stuff. My podcast, you can catch anywhere you get podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. It's called The Art and Science of Difficult Conversations, where we cover lots of different difficult conversations. And Heather, you're going to be a guest on our episode next week, or our recording next week. So we're looking forward to that. And then you can always just email me at, let me see which email to give you. let me give you myleadershippotential@gmail.com. Let's give you that one, but feel free to reach out. Let's talk about this. If you know about men's groups that are kind of running all over the place, I'd love to learn more about all of them and how they're growing and how they're doing and things like that. But yeah, I'd love to continue the conversation.
Right. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.